Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Good work finding us in our original location. We're going to say week two of three, talking about fact and falsehood in the news. So last week we talked about how to believe that truth exists. So not just to say that, but what do we actually need to do? How do we need to think and behave in order to truly believe that truth that truth is a thing and that we live in a common reality? So the way to believe in truth is to first plan not to like it. Plan that you won't like all of the truth that's there. Two, find out for yourself. Do the work of knowing on your own. Don't just let someone else do that on your behalf. And three, know that you don't know it all. Know that you don't know it all, Roger.
Welcome to the club.
Well, like I said, you know, I've got all your work, I'm sure.
So your homework was to find a source of news that plausibly challenges what you assume is true. And all of the words in that are important, right? Find a source of news so you know kind of where you get your news, right? You know where you get your thoughts and understandings of what's going on in the world. And you know that there's another source out there that does not agree with all of the facts that you are operating with. So I challenge you to find a source of news that not just challenges what you believe is true, but plausibly challenges what you believe is true. That actually sort of pushes against the facts that you operate with in a way that's realistic. Did anybody do that this week? Roger did. What did you find?
It was excruciating. It was a very painful thing I did.
Mm-hmm. What was painful about that?
Well, you really put me out of my comfort zone. I usually do public television or public radio.
Uh-huh.
But I listened to Rush Limbaugh for an hour.
Okay.
And then I watched Fox News for an hour.
Uh-huh.
And then it was a very interesting thing. I was on the road and looking at some, trying to find some station, and lo and behold, there was a station that was talking about the debate.
Okay.
That was going on, and I could not tell if it was a conservative or a liberal radio station, but it was very enlightening, though. I have no idea what it is.
Okay.
But they had. The discussion was about, somebody brought up that the most common sense person on the debate was, is it Tessie Gabbard? Is it Tessie?
Tulsi
Gabbard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I have not heard of this person, and so forth. And,
uh-huh.
It was a call-in show.
Okay.
And most everybody said that she was the most common sense person, and that if she got the nomination, they would vote for her. And then the host asked, who did you vote for in the last election? And they all said Trump.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. Now, from what the individuals calling in said about the debate, had they watched the same debate you did?
Yes.
Okay. So their facts and your facts lined up.
They did, right. And I was absolutely surprised.
Right. And so that's where we get into really interesting conversations, right? When we have both watched the same debate, or we have both learned about the same news event, not read the same news article necessarily, right? But we've both watched the same news event, and then have a conversation that assesses those events in distinct ways. So that's where you get the really interesting conversations.
On the call-in show, yeah. Rush.
Uh-huh.
It was a Friday, and anybody phoned in, I guess.
Uh-huh.
At that, they all picked on how a brain dead was Biden, because he seemed to be stumbling with his words and what he said. That was very, very interesting.
So
nobody said, they didn't say anything about any other candidates, but they just picked on Biden.
Yeah, so, and that's one way of actually watching different debates, right?
Right.
Not that there were two different debates. All of Biden's sort of, rhetorical gaps and run-on sentences and what have you were there in the debate that the Tulsi Gabbard people watched, right?
Right.
But as a set of facts sort of established for the sake of argument, right? It sounds like Biden may not have been in the debate that the Tulsi Gabbard folks watched. And, okay, to be honest, I don't remember Tulsi Gabbard physically being in the debate.
Not in that one.
So, she wasn't in that one.
She wasn't in that one.
She wasn't in this.
No, she wasn't in
the
last.
She wasn't in
she
the
was
third,
in the previous.
The previous one.
I see. Okay.
So,
isn't that interesting?
That's interesting, isn't it? So there was a debate, and we're going to talk about something else, which is a little bit like when you ask a politician a question, and they answer the question they would like you to have asked,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that happens in bad job interviews, too.
It does.
So this is one of those places where, I was trying to tick through all of the people on the stage, and I was doing something else while we were watching anyway, so I was trying to make sure that Tulsi Gabbard was not on stage before I accused you of not having known that Tulsi Gabbard was not on stage. that's one of those settings where all of a sudden we're not talking about the same debate. Right? We may be talking about the, what was it, July or whenever it was, debate. And comparing one individual's performance in that to the 10 individuals who are actually sort of the top and a half tier of Democratic candidates for the nomination. So that's a setting where it's really hard to keep all of your sort of your facts and figures and names and dates and events all squared away with each other, right? But it also invites us to, one, think more deeply about what it is we already thought, but two, to spend a little bit of time checking to see if the thing we're thinking is actually related to what's factually going on around us. This is the problem, right? This was our outstanding question from last week. When the news reports disagree with each other, how do I find what the facts are? Without going to the camps on the border, the detention facilities on the border, without doing the post-operation analysis of the damage at the oil refinery in Saudi Arabia. How do I know whether that drone was flown by the Houthi rebels in Yemen or flown by Iran, right? That's the current, there's a question of fact out there. And so how do we assess that, right? That's all happened within the last 36 hours, right? So being able to establish what the facts are is really important, because we can't properly have a values-based debate unless we can agree that we are talking about the same events. And that's really hard. It's really hard to establish that we're talking about the same events. So I want to explain the handout that I just gave you. This is version 5 of this chart, and it gets more nuanced as it goes. This is like a 2-day-old chart here, and this is an idea that began in December of 2016. You'll remember shortly before December of 2016, there was a relatively contentious presidential election. So this media bias chart came into being sort of as a back of the envelope kind of chart at the beginning of its life. Version 5 is actually built on an attempt to sort of quantify this and make these results more replicable, which means some of the sources have moved around. But what you've got here is a chart on two axes. One is the left to right axis is your, generally speaking, political bias. So your more left-leaning bias is on the left, and your more right-leaning is on the right. And it's actually, there are numbers down there that come from this work to sort of quantify and make this replicable. But it's sort of chunked into 7 buckets from most extreme left, hyperpartisan left, skews left, to neutral or balanced, skews right, hyperpartisan right, and most extreme right. That's one of the scales. And the way that they arrived at this scale and where things fall on this scale is by looking at, on a range of different issues, in the assessment of educated readers across the political spectrum, self-reported, where do people place this particular article or video from this particular news source? Where do you place that on sort of the right to left scale on a particular issue? Do that many, many times, add up all the numbers, average them, that's how that works. They found that these are, I have found over the versions of this chart, these are fairly consistent where a source falls on the bias scale. Your up-down scale is from more reliable to less reliable. And that is really on matters of fact. So how well established are the facts? How consistent are the facts as reported? Are the facts being reported in ways that are consistent with, well, ideally, what actually happened? And one of the ways to figure out what actually happened is to ask a lot of people what they think happened. People who have been witnesses to the events, and you know, sort of with some fuzz around the edges for uncertainty, if Gene and I and Marilee all describe the same event in roughly the same way, the rough center of what we've said is probably more or less what happened, right? Now, sometimes an outlier is correct because they have access to an angle on what happened that nobody else has access to. For the most part, even that outlier angle is going to then be consistent with what other people are saying about the same event from the vantage points that they have. So at the top you've got all the way from original fact reporting. So I was there, I took the pictures, I wrote the narrative of what happened, the end. And then down through some fact reporting, the analysis is then bringing in different sources and history and background. So the higher up in that neighborhood the more complex your analysis is. Until you get to sort of the top and you've got like the AP there back up into fact reporting. But more complex analysis is generally more reliable than less complex analysis because you get more fine-grained detail of what happened. And then you get down into, it's not really reliable fact, it is fair opinion. So if I'm trying to convince you of something, I'm going to choose my facts accordingly, right? Which is not to say I'm going to falsify things, because if I want to really persuade you, I want to persuade you based on the facts. Because if you can refute me on the facts, then everything I say as persuasive analysis of those falls apart, right? But if I'm solid on the facts and then saying, okay, based on A, B, and C, here's what you should think, that's fair persuasion. Then it gets murky. And you've got sort of the farther down, the less factual the information is. So then you go through a selective story that's really persuading you without accounting for all the facts. Then you've got misleading information, and then you've got just plain made-up information. Most of the sources are, well, so the sources are then plotted based on where they land on those two axes in that analysis by many different observers. And then the sources are plotted where they land there. And it's hard to read because they did a lot of sources. You can do fewer sources than this if you like. You can probably, because logos are catchy, you can probably find your source somewhere on here. And the final thing that that the creators of this chart acknowledge is that you could easily disagree with them about precisely where your source belongs on the particular area within the chart that it is. But in general, you really ought to agree with them, and we generally will agree with each other about the ballpark that a given source belongs on. So I could say, oh man, so they've got the Wall Street Journal higher on the reliability factor than the BBC, right? And higher than the failing New York Times. But I would disagree with that. I want the Washington Post all the way up there at the top, and I want to bump the Wall Street Journal down a couple of notches. If I'm leaving them basically in that neighborhood, I'm splitting hairs, right? And those sources have been in that neighborhood through iteration after iteration of this chart. And if you talk to reasonably well-informed people, they will generally tell you that those sources are all pretty reliable. Now, do they have their biases? Sure. Do they have more biases or less on certain issues? Sure. Figure that out. That's where us doing the work of learning for ourselves really matters, right? So there's your chart. It basically, basically covers the majority of the news sources that you're going to likely be interacting with. Now, how do I go about learning for myself whether a source is any good? So I didn't invent this, the crap test.
I'm glad.
But so this is presented by higher education instructors to teach information literacy. So if I come across a source, and this is actually built phrased not as much about news specifically, but remember that not all of the news on your news is news, right? A lot of the news on your news is opinion, and that's part of what you're listening for. That's part of what the crap test does for you. is it helps you identify where the opinion starts and the fact reporting leaves off. So you are zoomed in too far here. Sorry about that. There. That's all the information, but harder to read. You're welcome. So there are four things that you're asking when you read anything. This is kind of basic, but we have to remember this even when we are sitting at the table drinking our orange juice and reading our newspaper, right? Or sitting at the table drinking our orange juice and watching our favorite cable news program. We have to ask about the currency, the reliability, the authority, and the purpose of the information that we're taking in from any particular source. And we have to ask these twice about sources that are giving us information we like, or sources that just feel good, right? So currency, how recent is the information, or particularly with news, not so much how recent is it, but how timely is it? So if I give you a fact story that refers to something that happened 2 years ago, and I'm only reporting that now, that's sketchy. If I give you a story that references something that happened 2 years ago, and I can provide within the article a link to the story I wrote 2 years ago that has basically those facts, that's more reliable. Does that make sense? Because if I tell you right now that, oh, you know, so-and-so sold somebody a car that they knew was not in good shape 2 years ago, and it just happens that now I am trying to accuse them of malfeasance, then why was there no record of that 2 years ago? It's a paper trail thing. Now, there could be reason for there not to have been a record of it 2 years ago, right? So everything is everything has to go through our critical analysis here. Reliability, what kind of information is there? Is it primarily fact or assertions of fact, or is it primarily opinion? How are things presented? Are things presented in a way that that you could go back and verify, right? Can the author explain to you why they think what they think, or how they know what they saw happen? Are there references or sources? Can they tell you who these people are talking to them? Authority, who wrote this? What are their credentials? Who's the publisher or sponsor? Who paid for that? Is the author reputable? What's the publisher's interest in this information? Why does the publisher want this out there? I think it wasn't it Orwell who said, journalism consists of printing things people don't want, other people don't want you to read, everything else is public relations. Journalism is printing something that other people don't want you to know. Everything else is public relations. So if the publisher really wants this information out there, why? Why do they want that information out there? Are there advertisements on the website? That's a question that these information educators want you to think about. That's a complicated question, because it's not only are there advertisements on the website, but whose advertisements are they? A lot of advertising on the internet is actually sort of aggregated through services like Google. And so an advertiser will buy a keyword, and if you happen to be reading an article about climate change, then there are advertisers out there on both sides of wanting you to think climate change is an actual thing who want to advertise to people who are reading about climate change. Moreover, Google already knows what your political leanings are and what you bought most recently. And all of those go together to package a certain ad for you as you are reading that article about climate change. Which means the publisher may have no interest in that advertisement, right? So you're also asking, You know, on the one hand, who paid for this? On the other hand, who's buying my eyeballs and doesn't care what I'm actually reading? So that's a complicated one. Purpose or point of view? Again, is this fact or is this opinion? That's a complicated thing with afternoon radio, isn't it? That's a complicated thing with cable news, because the more ethical of the cable news hosts will acknowledge that what they're doing is opinion. They won't all acknowledge that, but there is a difference, and there is a difference when you see stories on your favorite cable news show, or on your favorite cable news channel anyway. You can see, if you're really discerning, you can see a difference between the stories that are presenting what happened or what is being said and talked about, and then the stories that step into, and here's what you should think about it. You have to be really careful about that stuff. Is the creator or author trying to sell you something? Another way of asking this is, what are the implications of the information? What are the implications of this information if you present it in this particular way? So those are all sort of pieces of how do I wrestle with two stories that seem to present different facts? That's what your media bias chart is there for. If you're getting your facts that are getting you up in a ladder from a source that is farther down either side, climb back up to the center of that and see what the Associated Press is saying. They're not giving you all the in-depth information, but they're likely giving you sort of a core of fact that you can work from. But also, you know, if you've climbed down one side, you are welcome to climb down the other side and find out what those people over there are also thinking. But remember that you're a lot farther away from the facts on the ground by the time you get to Fox News or MSNBC, right? I have noticed that since December of 2016 until now, Fox News has actually slid down the right-hand side of that chart relative to the other sources of news. I don't know exactly what that means in terms of were they properly located at one point and they've actually been moving, or have the reviewers, as they're working on making this replicable, have started to filter them differently. I don't really know for sure what that is. I just acknowledge that. I also acknowledge that one's political positioning in terms of how you see the political landscape around us has a lot to do with how biased you think, has a causative effect, as far as we can tell, on how biased you think sources of information are. So Pew has actually found that the more conservative someone is, the more likely they are to think that media as a whole is biased. That's just descriptive information. I just said it there for your knowledge. That probably is to say that be aware that that tendency is there. So as you are filtering sources, know that that's there. Because what we're really talking about, and what we have a little bit of time to watch here, is talking about confirmation bias. So confirmation bias, this is from the dictionary, is bias that results from the tendency to process and analyze information in such a way that it supports one's pre-existing ideas and convictions. So psychologically, we have a tendency to see, hear, smell, and experience information in a way that supports what we already thought. So what do we do about that? That's not political spin, by the way. That's basic psychology, that we tend to do that. So what do we do about that? I offer to you a video from, that's not what I meant, Bush, from Facing History and Ourselves on combating confirmation bias. So how do we get our TV turned back on? How do we fight confirmation bias as we are consuming the news? This is a piece presented by an organization that wants to help students and teachers understand that, quoting here, "The bigotry and hate that we witness today are the legacy of brutal injustices in the past." And to do that, they want to connect racism, prejudice, and anti-Semitism in history with those same realities today. So that's the purpose of this organization. I give that to you because let's be honest about our sources, right? As far as authority, the interviewees here include journalists and a political science professor. This is definitely an opinion piece. And embarrassingly, this source is not dated, but the transcript identifies one of the speakers by their dates of employment at whichever news organization they were with, ending in 2015. So we know that this is less than 5 years old.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.